You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Neggebauer.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. My name is Whitney Neggebauer, and today is Thursday, October 25th. There is a lot of news going on right now. First, I want to make sure that everyone is aware that the second draft of the Orca Task Force recommendations are out. And Monica Whelan-Shields and I will be talking more about that in this podcast. You go up to the Whale Scout website, whalescout.org. You will find a copy of the draft there and also a copy of our bold recommendations for your commenting. So go up there and check that out. It's similar to our draft recommendation simplified guide that we created at the last round. I cannot stress how critical it is for everyone to be commenting on these drafts. I know it's a lot of work, and I know that this has been a long process, but these public comments do really matter, and we cannot lose steam here. Some other really cool things that are happening. The Puget Sound Conservation Districts have gotten together for a Orca Recovery Day on November 10th, and that's your chance to get your hands dirty with a variety of projects all throughout the Puget Sound that are working to improve our watersheds for our salmon and, of course, for our orcas. So Whale Scout will be hosting our own event on November 10th for Orca Recovery Day, and it will be at Bear Creek, and we will be working alongside Forterra, where they have been working with some other property owners that are adjacent to the property that we're working at, and so we're going to be working together this time to do some restoration work there, and that will be from 9 to noon, again, on November 10th. That's in Redmond, and we'll be meeting at the PCC there on Avondale and then taking a really short walk over to the property. It's an amazing place where there's about 75 feet of shoreline along Bear Creek, and just this year, we watched sockeye there, and it's also a really important Chinook salmon stream. So go down to our website, you'll find information there as well, whalescout.org. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest, Monica Whelan-Shields of the Orca Behavior Institute. We are back on the Whale Scout podcast with Monica Whelan-Shields of the Orca Behavior Institute. Hey, Monica, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. Okay, so I want to jump into everything that's going on right now. Everything is just going super fast. But first, tell us, what's the update with the Orca Behavior Institute? What have you guys been up to?
Well, it's been a busy summer and a crazy year for whales in the Salish Sea, as you know. So we're just kind of trying to keep tracking all the changes that are going on and at the same time kind of be a voice to help bring some of the science to the public and make sure accurate information gets out there about everything that's happening here with the whales and about all the actions and potential actions on the table for public comment opportunities. So we've kind of taken on a little more of an advocacy role in just helping the science and the facts get out there as people are digesting everything that's going on.
Yeah, you know, it's been something that has been interesting to see in this task force process, how scientists are engaging in the policy field and how non-scientists are engaging in the policy field. What was it like for you personally with OBI and getting into some more of an advocacy role?
Well, I think it's mixed because as a scientist, you're supposed to be objective, right? And kind of keep your opinion out of it. But I think we're in a time in general as a society and specifically with these whales where the scientists really have to take that data and base what they're saying on the facts, but then you have to point out where that data is pointing us on what's important and what's going on and what we need to do if we, you know, make a decision, for instance, that we want the southern residents to stick around. Like, what are the issues? So I think it's really important for scientists to be engaged in public policy process because a lot of the hard science itself, like the published papers, are pretty inaccessible to most people who don't have a background in going through the statistics and all that kind of stuff. So it's really important to have scientists who can kind of explain the data and then tell people what the data means and what it means for the whales in this case.
That's so true. And it's why we really love what you do, because you're such a great communicator in taking that complicated stuff and translating it into real English that people can read and follow up on and understand. So thank you for doing that. Real specifically, what is it that you are interested in scientifically leading into this task force? Are there any topics?
Well, at the Orca Behavior Institute, one thing that came up for us early in the process was regarding all the talk about potentially culling pinnipeds. Mm-hmm. Killing seals and sea lions as a method for controlling salmon populations. And one of the things we've seen over the last few years is the boom of the marine mammal-eating killer whales in the area. And, you know, they're eating a lot of seals and sea lions and porpoises and other salmon-eating species when they're in the area here. And there's not a lot of information out there right now in terms of how Washington's marine mammal populations are doing or the impact that the mammal-eating killer whales are having on those populations. So one way that we tried to kind of engage in the task force process was put some numbers to the number of mammal-eating killer whales that we've seen in the area in recent years, and coming up with a model of how many seals they're likely to be eating when they're here. And we provided some of that information to the task force, and we'll have a paper coming out in the near future to kind of inform that process a little bit and make sure any decisions that are made about controlling other species, you know, are looking at the full picture and realizing that we have a very efficient seal culling predator that's here a lot more than they used to be, and they're probably doing a pretty good job of helping balance things out.
Yeah, wow. That was what really struck me at the very first task force meeting was, one of the task force members said when Governor Inslee was sitting in the room, literally the one time he's physically been at these task force meetings, the very first comment was, well, there's this elephant in the room and it's the pinnipeds. And it really, really played a huge role in that meeting and has continued throughout. So I appreciate your voice and others bringing the science to the table on that issue. What have been your overall thoughts about the task force process? And then let's dive into what's going on right now, because we're at a really critical moment.
Yeah, I'll have to say at the beginning when I first, I went to the Wenatchee meeting, was the first task force meeting I went to. And I came away from that pretty frustrated with the process. There were some people at the table that clearly didn't have the expertise about southern resident killer whales and didn't know, a lot of the basic facts that those of us who have kind of dedicated our lives to them know, or even just the general public know about how often they're here and what they're eating and where they go. And it was shocking to me that there were people being asked to kind of decide the future of these whales that didn't necessarily have the basics. And I recognize that there's a lot of important interest groups at the table and that we need to listen to everyone's voices. But when you're doing something so short term, trying to wrap up these, first set of recommendations in less than a year, it seemed to me that we needed people with a little bit more background maybe at the table. And then so it was frustrating to sit there and not be able to speak or participate and hear some of the things that were being suggested too, like the pinniped culling, which we're not in favor of. And in that first meeting, not hear the lower Snake River dams brought up at all. So I left that meeting pretty frustrated with the process. But since then, there's been, an increase in public engagement, and that has really shifted the conversation to what's most important. And we've seen the Snake River dams take on a bigger role in the conversation. And we've heard from task force members directly that the public comments are changing the conversation. So the fact that public engagement is actually bringing some of the most important issues to the forefront. And now I know it's been a frustrating process, but there are some really good actions on the table that could really make a difference. So I think there's hope. I think we have to have hope, and some good will definitely come out of this process.
Yeah, I know it sounds cliche, but it really has been a roller coaster of really high points and of some really low points. But I think that all in all, I don't know if it's the steering committee or who it is that's really, and keeping this thing on the right track as best as possible. And I do, too, personally feel that the public comments are being heard for the most part, and that everyone's doing the best that they can to bring everyone's input into what's coming out of this. But, you know, the best that we can, because there's interest groups on all different sides, and a lot of what we've seen are people hanging out in their corners trying to protect their interests. But as far as attention goes in the overall broader picture of Southern resident orca recovery, I mean, there's never been a time when there's been more focus and more attention on this issue. And I feel like the whales also gave this huge boost in public attention with the tragedies that happened this summer. If ever we had to go through those horrible, horrible tragedies, I think it was a little bit of a silver lining that happened now when there was a spotlight on it, and people were being, you know, asked to make tough choices and decisions. So I guess where we're at, right? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're so right about the whales and the timing of everything. It's, you know, we've asked ourselves before, like, are, you know, is there hope for the Southern residents? Are we past the tipping point? What do we need to do to turn things around? And it really feels like we're living through that time right now, where this is the make it or break it point for this population of whales. And with the task force process and, you know, more attention coming from both the U.S. and Canadian federal governments too about potentially taking more actions, then the whales absolutely turning, you know, turning things on its head by what happened this summer with J-35 and with J-50. And I said at the last task force meeting in the public comment period that J-35 has done more for Southern resident killer whale recovery in the last, you know, within the 17 days she carried her calf than we have done for their population since their endangered listing. And she really, you know, brought the, not just the state and not just the nation's attention, but the entire world's attention to this population of killer whales. And like you said, you know, as tragic as it was, the timing couldn't have been better. And we need, you know, all those eyes on these whales and on our politicians and everyone else to make sure that we do the right things going forward.
Absolutely. And so right now we're at a critical point. The draft recommendations from the task force was just released yesterday, and now the public has a really, really, really short window of opportunity to send in their comments on this draft. They are due on October 29th at midnight, and myself, along with Monica and Cindy Hansen and Susan Marie Anderson from Orca Network and the Salish Sea Ecosystem Advocates, are putting together another simplified guide with some bold recommendations for the recommendations. So what we think would be bold and what we think could be added to it in order to make it bold. Do you want to talk a little bit about what we're up to there?
Sure. So the task force process on one hand is happening, you know, very quickly, but on the other hand, I know it's not happening quickly enough for some people who feel like we need to be, you know, doing everything we can for these whales. And it's been a long process, but the public comment period is so important. And it's, as you said, really short this time, just 5 days. And it's a long list of, you know, more than 30 recommendations with all these implementation details. And it's a lot to ask of people to go through and digest all of this and, you know, make meaningful comments, but can't emphasize, you know, how important it is. And, you know, as the four of us have kind of been attending these meetings and reading all the documents that come out, again, we, you know, hopefully playing the role of trying to break some of this down into easier language to understand of what's really on the table and what's being proposed. And also, you know, from all of our backgrounds of having followed these whales and all the issues and science that's been done, trying to help provide some input to people on what comments are needed in terms of making these the boldest possible recommendations going forward, because we have really heard a mix of things from the people on the task force. There are some members that do seem to be protecting their own interests and others that are really advocating for the whales and doing, you know, they're asking, is this package enough? Are we doing enough to really help these whales? And, you know, the public comments will help inform what the task force does going forward. And As I said before, there's some great recommendations on the table, but there's also some areas where some bolder language could be put in. And that's what we need people to really take the time to do is dive into this stuff a little bit this weekend and put your thoughts on paper and let the task force members know what needs to be done.
And we've heard from a task force member that that they believe that personalized comments in your own words are the most powerful. So I think reading through this guide and digesting the information and then putting it in your own words is going to be powerful. And your own personal experiences and informed comments, I think, are really, really powerful. One thing that I'm sure listeners are going to want to know about is what's the deal with Snake River Dams? Explain.
Well, obviously, we wish these dams had been taken down 20 years ago, and that didn't happen. And there's, you know, so many of us who want things to happen as soon as possible for these whales because they need to happen as soon as possible, and we know that. Like I said, at the Wenatchee meeting, the Snake River dams weren't even brought up until the public comment session at the end of the day. Then at each task force meeting since then, they've had a bigger role in the conversations, and at the final meeting coming up on November 6th, they're going to be, I think, one of the two main topics up for discussion. And the current recommendation is about convening a stakeholder panel to talk about the costs and benefits of the dams and what type of mitigations would have to be put into place to, you know, help account for what would happen if we breach the dams, because there would be effects on people. And I know, you know, everything that's out there about the dams declining in usage and, you know, they're costing us money and all of those things, they're all true. But it's also true that there are people whose jobs and livelihoods are relying on these dams. And as much as we want to start breaching them tomorrow, I think if we do that, whoever makes that decision is going to end up in court from all these people that would be affected by the dams being breached. So I know the language of creating another panel and talking about this further is not what we ultimately, you know, want. We don't want another year or 2 years of discussions, but it's going to be a critical piece of the process, and it's not one that's in place. It's coming up with a solid mitigation package that will get the people in Eastern Washington a fair deal and get their support for breaching these dams to help the salmon and the whales. And, you know, the whole health of the ecosystem where they live and where we live. And so the current recommendation, I don't think is quite there yet. We're really pushing, one, for the timeline to be faster. They were originally talking about the panel reporting back to the task force next September. The current language talks about pushing it out a further year. So we really want to emphasize this should start now and should end next year for sure. And then also the focus of this stakeholder panel really needs to be on that mitigation package and how can we make this a fair solution for everyone involved rather than the kind of cost-benefit analysis that's on the books right now, which would just be a continuation of this debate that's been going on for decades. So this action does need to be bolder. I know it's not going to be as bold as a lot of people are going to hope for, but really having followed this issue closely for many years, I think this is a much-needed step, and the fact that this is even going to move forward at all is a testament to the public voice in this whole process.
Absolutely. And at the last House Force meeting, there were folks that were saying, you know, you have to go slow to go fast kind of a thing, where even though this does feel like a slow step, in the end, it may be the most efficient way to get this done. So I'm optimistic about it as well, and understand and agree that you'd like to fix everything yesterday, but that's, you know, going to be basically impossible to do. And it kind of reminds me of the issue that we had in the Salish Sea with the Atlantic salmon net pen farms, where there was this huge collapse and you know, hundreds of thousands of fish escaped, and it was this huge crisis. And then everyone got together in Olympia, and there was all this debate of, well, do we just ban them? Do we kick them out now and get them out of here quick? And a lot of people were like, yeah, of course, let's jump on that option. That seems like the best thing. But instead, what went through was a phase out, and that was because they wanted to avoid litigation. So they will be out. They might be out sooner, but they're going out, and it seems like the best that we could do. And perhaps the same thing, the orcas in this case are the big crisis, and now we can work on slowly getting these dams out in a way that everyone can get behind and support.
Yeah, a lot of people in their public comments have asked the task force to breach the dams, but it's not in their power to do that. You know, all they're there to do is make recommendations to the governor, and it's not within the governor's power to breach the dams either. He could state his support for it, which I think would go a long way in moving the process forward. Mm-hmm. But really, something that the state does have the power to do is bring all these, you know, groups together, and they've talked about collaborating with Oregon and Idaho, which is needed as well. And it's a piece of the process that hasn't happened yet. And that is a real action that the state can do. So again, it's frustrating for those of us, you know, watching the situation with the whales. But I agree with you that it is a necessary step to move this whole process forward.
So you can read more about this discussion and others in the Bold Commenting Guide, and that will be posted online on Facebook. We'll post it on the Whale Scout website. Where else will it be posted, Monica?
Yeah, it'll be on the Orca Behavior Institute page. I'm sure it'll be on Orca Network and the Sailor Sea page as well. So it will be up there and easy to find and access.
Wonderful. And I want to ask you about your book that you've been working on for a while now, and give us a little sneak peek about it, and tell us about what the process is looking like now.
Yeah, so when I first came to the area as a high school student and started learning about the whales, you know, I did what a lot of us did, which was collect all the books I possibly could on on killer whales in general. And one of the first books that I read was Orca, the Whale Called Killer by Eric Hoyt.
Of course.
And just devoured that book. And I was surprised that there wasn't something similar written about the southern residents. And I've heard other people say the same thing, that, you know, they have volunteers or naturalists or interns that come to the area. There isn't really one place that kind of introduces the whole story of the southern residents and what they've gone through, from the live capture era to the kind of being the beginning of killer whale research, through the boom of whale watching to, you know, their endangered listing and all the conservation actions going on right now. So about 10 years ago, kind of started the writing process, and it's been a project that I've picked up and put down many times, sort of trying to write that story. And there's been, you know, a lot of interviews and a lot of reading, and there's a lot of information out there about the southern residents, but again, just kind of trying to pull it together into one place. And the original plan was, I had a publishing contract and the book was supposed to be out early next year, but as with everything with the whales, there seems to be a little bit of controversy in politics that enters into it. So unfortunately, some stuff happened behind the scenes and I lost the publishing contract, but the book is pretty much ready to go. So I'm going to move forward with it anyway and go ahead and self-publish it. And the plan is for it to be out still early in 2019. And so it will be kind of this broad story about the southern residents. And with everything that's happened this summer, I think I'll have to add a little bit at the end of where we are now and where we're going to be looking going forward. But I think it's the right time to release this book and keep spreading the story of what's going on with these whales.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And I can't imagine trying to keep up with all the information and all the stories that are coming out, especially in this time. But I'm grateful for that, and grateful for your voice, which will be now published out there for everyone to read and to understand the whales through your eyes. I think you're just such a great communicator. Yeah, I just thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else that you think that the public really needs to know right now that you'd like to share?
I think it's just kind of what we said before, that we really need people to take the time and engage in this public comment process that's going on. That the process can be frustrating, as you and I know, but it's so important that people make their voices heard. And sometimes it feels like you're kind of yelling into the void, but as we've talked to some of the task force members and the people running the process, you know, we've really seen firsthand how the public comments are influencing the outcome. So it's a concrete action that people can take, that we need people to take. So just really encourage everybody to take some time and kind of go through that whole report, and hopefully our bold comment guide will help break it down for people, and submit your comments and thoughts to the task force.
Yes, everyone always asks, what can I do? And this is it right now. We need you to go on the Governor Inslee's website, just Googled Orca Task Force, and find the link to comment, and I'll put it in the links with this podcast. And by October 29th, put in your comments. It's a really easy Survey Monkey, and you can have the guide right next to you and go through it really, really quick.
And even if anyone's listening to this later on, this process is going to go on for another year. They're going to do a second year to talk about further actions, longer term actions. So there will be more public comment opportunities coming up periodically. So it's worth paying attention to that.
Yes. And the very last meeting is on November 6th, Election Day. And I know it's during the middle of the week, and that makes it nearly impossible for most people to get there. But the public support and turnout is important. There will be a public comment period there as well. And even your body in the room wearing a button is demonstrating your support. And so I really encourage you all to attend in person as well. And it's a really educational process as well.
Absolutely.
Well, Monica, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, and we will check in with you again in a little while and hear more updates from you. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you all for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, go up to our website to find all of our other podcasts. And in fact, if you enjoyed listening to Monica, we've had several podcasts together, and you can go back and listen to some of those episodes as well on our website and on iTunes. Feel free to subscribe. Thank you all so much for listening. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information. Manatee.